Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's program. Ciao, Venezia.
I think this type of building is showcasing how architecture, design, technology, and the relationship with natural elements are in capacity to have a lower impact on the carbon footprints.
We're back on the road as we report from the 17th Venice Architecture Biennale. We unpack the love-hate relationship between architecture and the city, hear how to reconnect the countryside to urban areas and improve quality of life, explore borders and the communities around them, and even muse on what will be the world's largest single-dome greenhouse. All that and more in the next 30 minutes right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. So welcome to this week's programme. The Venice Architecture Biennale opened its doors last week and we couldn't be happier to be back on the ground reporting from the world's most important design and architecture event. The themes of this year's edition are also very much of the moment, with diversity, displacement and climate change highlighted throughout. And to help us bring some of the exhibitions and pavilions to life, we dispatched Monocle's design editor, Nolan Giles, along with our Europe editor-at-large, Ed Stocker, and our writer, Nick Manise. Let's get started with a report from Nolan and his visit to the Belgian Pavilion, which explores the love-hate relationship between architecture and the city.
I'm Dirk Somers from Bovenbouw, curator of the Belgian Pavilion here in Venice.
It's the first day of the preview and I've wandered into this pavilion. First of all, it's absolutely spectacular. We're surrounded by these incredible timber models. Can you take us through what we're standing in front of?
What we've actually done is build a fictional landscape with 50 relatively contemporary projects. There are new buildings, there are refurbishments, restoration projects, all types of different projects. But what they all share is that they kind of work with these Belgian conditions of rather mixed cities with a relatively weak urban conditioning, and they seem to enjoy that condition as a source of energy, of creativity. So we see a lot of jumps in scale, we see very narrow lots, we see very deep lots, we see old buildings next to new buildings of very different eras. So it's a very rich ecology of different architecture, but they also seem to have a certain, you know, they have a discipline, they have a certain ability to work together. So it's a very nice balance within the selection of architecture of creative energy, but also respecting certain conventions that make the cityscape work.
And it's quite amazing because if you wander in here and have a look at the different buildings on show, you could easily be kind of walking around Antwerp or somewhere like that. There is such a texture to these buildings. And like you say, a lot of them are quite narrow. They have to fit in between existing architecture. Was there any kind of red thread that kind of wove all these together? Is there anything, I mean, you mentioned fighting against the urban conditions. What were they kind of fighting against? What are the problems and what kind of makes them all seem so cohesive like this?
Mm-hmm. Well, Belgian cities actually grew from a relatively rural underlayer. So it's not like Paris or Amsterdam, places which have a strong typological ID to them. So what you find is weird building blocks, kinked streets, quirky plots, and on top of that totally unurban underlayer, the city grows and densifies and intensifies. And all of these projects seem to work with that condition, take joy and pleasure out of it, and actually do their job in the city in many ways, not just how they look, also typologically, how they exploit these difficult conditions, how they introduce very different types of programs within that condition. We have everything here from the cultural center to the police station to the doctor's practice, the city hall, housing, offices. It's all very mixed. It's extremely rich. And it's also very fascinating to look at, to look through buildings into other buildings, etc.
It's quite amazing that this event is happening why do you think the Biennale is so important and, you know, bringing people around these ideas and this creativity?
Well, to respond also in relation to this show, I think it looks like we talk about architecture a lot, but what's also fundamental and it's also an aspect we like to think we can contribute is that a lot of the projects you see on display actually are generated through the contribution of quality chambers, city architects, better tendering procedures than general to create opportunities for architects. So in a way, we're not so much promoting architecture in Flanders. I'm much more eager to promote policy making, to promote the middle ground. So in our catalog, we've also extensively discussed that middle ground because, you know, you can't be a striker if the middle field doesn't do its work. So I hope in a way that, you know, with all these people passing by, something of that middle ground can actually, you know, maybe filter through in other countries.
I'm really interested in how a mayor or an urban planner might perceive what you've done here. How do you think that cities can be built better by lessons that you're teaching here?
We really believe that many of the discussions, certainly in Belgium, they're really fearful of densifying the city, of going beyond three stories, of making daring choices. There's also, you know, a certain skepticism about what architects can do. And I really hope that, you know, there are a lot of situations we've created which make people trigger their imagination, give them a bit more guts in addressing urban questions in their city.
Dirk Summers of Bovenbouw Architecture, the curator of the Belgian Pavilion there, in conversation with Monocle's Nolan Giles. Up next on The Urbanist, we head to the Polish countryside. Stay with us. The world is becoming ever more urbanised, and with it, the countryside ever more depopulated. In fact, the tension between rural areas and cities will be one of the defining themes of the 21st century, even spilling over into politics. At the Venice Biennale, the Polish Pavilion has commissioned an installation called Trouble in Paradise, examining these tensions in the Polish countryside, some of them the legacy of socialism, and looking at new ways to revitalise housing there, connect with cities and improve quality of life. Ed Stocker spoke to the co-curator, Rafael Schliva, from Venice's Giardini.
We enter into a singular space in which we are somehow embraced by this 70-meter-long object. This is the curtain on which we have printed so-called panorama of the Polish countryside. It is a fictional landscape, a place when everyone can recognize, but no one knows where it is, because it's constructed, right? You do recognize in here the energy landscape. At the same time, when you move around and stroll through the pavilion, you notice that there are some villages appearing, the traditional ones from the pre-war period, then the socialist one in the very middle with the so-called Plattenbau buildings and the animal husbandries, so-called state agricultural farms. Then you go and follow along the curtain and you find up there more contemporary condition of the landscape. These are the cube houses from 90s. Then you turn around and you see another somehow important elements in the landscape. These are the energy pylons up there, which somehow make a very important impact on the visual orientation in the landscape. So you come along this curtain and then you find yourself at the exit where you actually came from. And you find yourself at the network of the roads, which is somehow another part of the perception inside of the countryside.
Architecture is so much about urban spaces, and yet I feel that the 21st century conversation is so much about this tension between, I guess, urban and rural. Was that part of the motivation for the Polish Pavilion, this idea to explore how architecture can rethink rural living?
Well, I think that you quite nailed it. We open up the description of the pavilion with a very simple observation that nowadays, the 93% of the territory of Poland is considered by the administrative division as a rural landscape. What does it mean? We actually don't know. It's 93% of the rural areas and 7% of the cities. It means that the villages, that the landscape which you can see on this panoramic object is somehow all considered to be a countryside, yet it is not an idyllic countryside that people do usually imagine. It is a landscape which is constructed by the variety of the transforming elements inside. So this tension which you described up there is a very ambition of this project to think about the existing landscape and somehow make two steps into the future and reimagine the possibilities of the countryside. How do we imagine the ways of living and producing, working basically, inside of these spaces? So what do we have in here in the pavilion is the, in the center of the space, six projects by six invited European teams. We ask them to think about these possible ways of living and working in the countryside, but from the few perspectives, from the perspective of territory, settlement, and dwelling.
Some are quite abstract. I want to wander over to one that's a model that looks like it's built from salt. Do explain.
This is very metaphoric explanation of this project, because the project is partly radical but derives from the real condition. What do we have in here is the forecast of the situation in which forestry becomes most important subject during the hardships of the climate condition, no? And what we have in here is that we define the forestry as the subject of the rural areas, which has to be given much more attention. So forests are growing. There is a new metabolic condition which makes fauna and flora somehow grow rapidly in such a way that the villages are disappearing. This project presents precisely such a part of the house, a section of the house, which is overgrown by this metabolic condition. And what happens in future is that people have to find their new ways of inhabitation inside of the forest, inside of the small villages, find the new typology of living somehow in peace with the nature.
And I guess that's the whole point of the Venice Biennale, no? This idea that you want to start a conversation. And obviously there's members of the public here, perhaps fewer than in previous years due to coronavirus, but there's also architects from all over the world. It's part of the point of this that you want other architects to come here and think we need to be building more in symbiosis with nature. Do you hope that this can have a real influence?
You're right on point to say this, and I would even extend it to the larger framework of the Biennale. There's been a discussion recently that more and more we observe the various collaborations between nations, much more than the presentation of the work of particular nations inside of the pavilion. So this is not only the symbiosis with the nature, this is very much symbiosis between ourselves, particular studios and particular experiences. When we put them together from the whole Europe, the variety of the knowledge, we can construct much more better, much more careful, and much more precise solutions. I think that most probably the exhibitions is precisely this sort of ground when you try to enlarge the friction space between the society and the discipline, right? This is what you do with the exhibition. You want to communicate with a mass society a very specific idea which is somehow deriving from the local place, yet it is universalized. Pavilion is Polish, yes, yet the exhibition is on the international grounds. Therefore, I think that what you said about the symbiosis is a larger idea of a cooperation between particular nations and particular experiences in order to construct new framework of knowledge, new framework of collaborations. Ultimately, I think rather sort of United Nations more than Eurovision contest relations.
Rafał Szliwa from the Polish Pavilion speaking there with Monocle's Ed Stocker. Switzerland's landlocked nature at the heart of Europe means that many of its towns and even big cities, such as Lugano, Geneva, Basel, Lausanne, sit on borders with other countries. The result? Urban areas are places of social, cultural, political and architectural friction. Issues that the Geneva-based architects, Laboratoire d'Architecture, wanted to unpack as the curators for Switzerland's national participation at the Biennale. Their project, ORAI, Experiences on the Border, involved engaging with inhabitants of the border between Switzerland and its neighbours. Participants were invited to build models of imaginary or real places at the border, expressing their experience of living in these communities. The models, as well as complementary audio and video works, are now on show in the Giardini. To find out more, Monocle's Nick Mnis caught up with one of the curators, Munir Ayoub. Here, Ayoub starts by explaining why border communities are worth looking at right now.
When we started the project, it was 2 years ago now. And at that time, the border were not as in the actuality and the heart of the actuality as we had now. But otherwise, we are absolutely convinced that this beginning of this 21st century, borders are the laboratory where we can see, when we can understand, and maybe we have to work as architects in these political issues, socio-economical issues on the border. And I am quite sure that as we can consider that the 20th century was the century of the metropolises, of the cities, this beginning of the century is probably the century of the borders.
And how do you start to unpack that in this project? You're working with people that live on the borders. What did you start to discover, and I guess what are you presenting with them?
We did two different tours. The first one was to meet personally the people who live in the border and ask them what is the relation they have. We can see that the reality was so different that we had in mind. To see through the point of view of somebody else is really different, and it changed completely the way that we see the border. And when we came back a few weeks ago, we came back to meet people collectively, the same one that we met 2 years before. This was really, really amazing how the people can invest the subject and can project themselves in the future of the border.
And are there design lessons from those discussions that could be picked up on by other architects?
Maybe there is two lessons. The first one may be about the border. The title of our project, we choose this word, Oraé. Oraé is an old synonym of borders, and it means the edge of the territory. But in the figurative way, it means to the beginning of something. And we are quite convinced that we have no choice. We have to reconsider how we live in the border and to consider them as a territory of relationship, of otherness, of alterity, and not more as a place of violence. And maybe the second thing, what I think it's really important in we try to do in this project, we worked with about 100 people on site during 2 years, and it is how we can produce a collective knowledge about a territory, the border, with people living in this territory. It is what about this project, I think.
And as for the actual models, so you're working with people living on the border?
Yeah. All these models you see in this room, we started them, we did them with inhabitants of the border. So each model started with a representation of one person, of how he perceived this territory. Maybe this one is quite interesting, is we call it the grüne Grenze, in German means green border. And it's in the north of Switzerland, between Switzerland and Germany. It's a big forest, a really crowded forest. And in the Second War, refugees could cross the border between Germany and Switzerland to go to Switzerland in this place, because it's really difficult to control by the policemen. Mm. And it's still used then by people coming from Sri Lanka, from Balkans, and now refugees from Syria. So it's called the grüne Grenze, and we call it maybe the tolerance of nature. And it's quite interesting, because in the Arab world we have also this green zone, but in Iraq and Lebanon, for example, green zone is a military zone, and here it's just a place that we can pass.
I'm curious as well, if I'm someone, say, visiting from Australia, what can I take from this exhibition home? What are the takeaways? Is it to be more compassionate of people living on the border? Do you have any thoughts on what you hope people will take away from this?
We try usually to say that this project is about not our point of view. When we started the project, we had not a point of view, precise point of view about the border. This is all what you see here is coming from people, and they give us this idea that the border could be something else, could be a territory of otherness. And I am quite sure that in this contemporary world where borders are a very difficult place, we learned from people that they could be something else. And I am absolutely sure that as an architect we have to go there and to try to change our perception of the border.
Munir Ayoub there, one of the curators of the Swiss Pavilion, in conversation with Monocle's Nick Manise. After this, we're back with Monocle's Nolan Giles as he takes us on a quick tour around the Austrian Pavilion and explores the concept of platform urbanism. This is The Urbanist.
What is platform urbanism? That's the question visitors are asking as they wander into the Austrian Pavilion at the Venice Biennale. A bombardment of multimedia presentations sets out to answer this as guests view the contributions of some 50 collaborators that show how platforms such as social media, the web, and SMS messaging play a role in shaping the way we live in and interact with our cities. Works include images of Banksy's attempts to help revive the economy of the British town Folkestone by coating its walls in street art to encourage snap-happy tourists, as well as coverage of concerts in Las Vegas, enhanced by thousands of fans waving their smartphones. The efforts of the exhibition chime well with the Biennale's broader theme of how we will live together. I sat down with the curators to hear more.
Hello, I'm Peter Mertenberg. I'm the director of the Center for Global Architecture, and I'm based in Vienna and London.
Hello, I'm Helge Mühlschammer. I'm the co-director of the Center for Global Architecture. I'm also based in London and in Vienna.
The way in which we look at platform urbanism is that it's a highly ambivalent phenomenon. The way in which you can also look at platform urbanism is as an enabling moment for people who would otherwise not be in a position to come together, other than through via a platform. Of course, there's a basic entry condition, which is having access to an app, having access to a website. Other than that, it's platforms can be really enabling for communities who want to create a momentum for their activities, who want to make themselves noticeable to others. So it's in that way we can look at platforms as the transformation of what has emerged 20 years earlier as new networked movements.
As we keep stressing, platforms rely on our contribution, our participation, no users, no platforms. And so if we say that the future of platform urbanism is a dystopian scenario, then that also relies on us. You know, it depends on us. If we only contribute with kind of nightmarish visions, perhaps then it will be a dystopia. But there are other ways to think about it. And that's why this image bank with the project we like is so important to us. Because if we intervene on the level of the imaginary, we can also intervene on a conceptual level, how we can even think about the future, how we can think about architecture and urbanism. What does it mean for us? Is it relevant for us? Is architecture relevant? Is it more than just a convenience that provides us with a pleasant setting? Do we understand architecture as an important element of societies, that it structures societies, that it's a social category, it's a political category? And if we all want to realize that and acknowledge that, then there is a way for us to have a say. Precisely, and even more so, I think, in the context of platform urbanism, because it's on us to furnish.
With the onus on us to guide the way technology can help improve the way we live in cities, I was interested to know how this exhibition could help and the lessons that those visiting the pavilion could take away from it and apply into their daily lives.
That's a really tricky question. We've discussed this actually throughout the last few days, is that it's funny and interesting at the same time that your everyday person responds perhaps even stronger to this topic, because there is this everyday experience of platforms and in the way how it has influenced our spatial existence. People know very well that they move through space very differently now, because they also interact with platforms, and that shapes their interaction with space. That's very clear for most people. Funnily enough, there are still pockets in the professional world that say, well, you know, this is something for the digital guys, you know, this is something for the programmers and for the platform providers, but it's not actually an issue for architecture. There are still people around who say that. And so it's curious to see that, as some people say, that the Biennale is primarily a business fair for those in the profession. So it will be curious to see how those professionals respond to the topic, also in connection with your everyday visitor.
For Monocle in Venice, I'm Nolan Giles.
When completed, Tropicalia in northern France, not far from the city of Lille, is set to be the world's largest single-dome greenhouse. The biosphere will offer ways of protecting tropical fauna and flora, but the heat produced by the greenhouse's effect will also be recycled and even redistributed to a nearby village. So could this be part of an architectural model for the future in both rural and urban settings? Monocle's Ed Stocker spoke to the architect behind the project, Tomar Koldifi, at an exhibition of the project at Venice's Square Castello, organized by Zueca Projects during the Biennale.
The Tropicalia project was born about 10 years ago. It came from the idea of a man, a doctor, Cédric Guérin, who is a veterinary, and he had a dream, was to build a place that is becoming a kind of a reunion between fauna and flora into his hometown, his home place in the north part of France along the seaside. And the idea was also to create some connection and get people aware of the situation of some species that are in danger on the planet. And he wanted that to be into a building that should be the world's largest tropical dome that ever been built. But of course, this topic of greenhouses has been there for many years. Since 17th century, we looked at what happened in big cities, those big exhibitions that was showcasing. Everybody has always been fascinated by natural elements, and not always a lot of people have the capacity to travel in the world. So in architecture, there are many examples, and one of the latest one, of course, is the Eden project. Our client here wanted to push the idea a little further in a way that its building becomes also an advanced technology showcasing how design and architecture can address carbon neutrality, can be not only a building for destination, but a building that is also serving another role, which is using the energy of the building that we need to heat all the dome for neighbors, for other functions, for other equipments that are located around the city.
How does that work exactly? Is that from the sunshine? Is that something to do with the plants? How does this sort of energy or heat generation that's then used elsewhere work?
All the energy that is being needed for the building will be actually coming from the sun. It will be stocked into an air chamber, which is something that is the innovation of this project, because in this almost 3 meter high air chamber that is just above you, in between sky and between the space, we will stock sun heat. It will be stocked and will be heated almost like 90 degrees. And from this central heating system, we will diffuse it and re-inject it for the entire building, but only for the entire building. Then it will be stocked in the ground and then diffused in another network to the surrounding building equipment, such as an hospital that is nearby.
How do you think the building ties in, this structure ties in with this wider conversation people are having at Venice this year about how we live together, how we live perhaps more responsibly or more sustainably?
Well, I think also that architects are facing new challenges also of helping each other and working together, as opposed to the older version where you had the engineers, the designers, the landscape architect on one side to another. In this particular project, in order to make it an advanced building, a progressive building, we had to come up with a global design where technology, carbon footprint, the shape of the building, the structure, all work together to make something that is much more challenging and much more responsible. I think this type of building is showcasing how architecture, design, technology, and the relationship with natural elements are in capacity to have a lower impact on the carbon footprint. So it's a big step, and it's an ongoing process that we are doing every day at the studio.
I know this construction has been delayed, but I believe it's going to be finished by 2024. Is the idea that it's a ticketed place that draws international visitors? Are we looking ahead to hopefully a return to people travelling from all over the place to come and visit this place and also take away something educational?
Tropicalia has also a purpose of education, which is a very strong mission statement from our client. And it goes from addressing openness and learning experience for kids around, for schools, but also there will be a residence for scientists, for researchers, in order to work with different places and trying to promote change and to protect some of the endangered spaces in the world.
That was Thomas Coldiffy, the architect behind Tropicalia, speaking with Ed Stocker. And that's all for this edition of The Urbanist. A huge thanks there to Nolan, Ed and Nick Manise, who took on the very challenging and difficult task of going to Venice and drinking lots of Aperols. No, I'm joking. They did a very great job here for The Urbanist. We're just disappointed we didn't get to go as well. But today's episode was produced by Carlotta Ribello and also David Stevens. And David, of course, also edited the show. And to play you out of this week's episode, well, here's Magdalena Bay with Venice. Thank you for listening, City Lovers. Long story.